When the qualities of mind are humanly perceived and held in consciousness, then existence begins to assume divine proportions. Our material world is simply the carnal in our own individual thinking objectified. Then, when we begin to take into consciousness some of the divine, those divine ideas are likewise projected, not as matter, but to the extent of canceling that much of matter in the mortal picture which the carnal mind has drawn for us as matter. We have a world, we will say, of matter in which there is hate and all that goes to make up material existence. Now, this hate exists in that world only because of your and my thinking. Now, we begin to take into consciousness a little sense of divine love. We begin, we will say, to become conscious of God as love. The understanding of God as love dwelling in our consciousness is bound to take place in our conscious existence. And that hate which this love has displaced ceases to be part of our conscious existence. Thus does our material picture improve with the influx of the divine into consciousness, until sooner or later there has come enough of the divine into thought to replace all of the carnal, and then existence becomes spiritual, wholly spiritual, and the millennium will have been reached. In this same passage from Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy has written, quote, "It is love which paints the petal with myriad hues, glances in the warm sunbeam, arches the cloud with the bow of beauty, blazons the night with starry gems, and covers the earth with loveliness." Close quote. To accomplish all of this, where must this love exist but in human consciousness? It is the divine in a human consciousness which makes all things new and brings beauty, sublimity, sweetness, joy, harmony, and peace into individual material existence. Love has no power to enrich your and my existence until it dwells in our individual consciousness to the exclusion of that which claims to be its opposite. Love does not come down from above and panoply you and me with its beneficent influence. Love must be admitted into your and my consciousness and retained there, in order that the petal may be painted with myriad hues, and that the earth may be covered with loveliness. And how essential it is to know and appreciate what love really is. Love, unexpressed, is not love. Man, we learn in Christian Science, is God reflected. God is love. Therefore, love reflected is man. Love unreflected is not man. Therefore, just to believe that God is love and that man is the image and likeness of God is not enough for you and me. It is not enough for man, and it is not enough for God. Love unreflected is not man. Hence, to become men of God, to bring ourselves under God's laws of health, happiness, harmony, abundance, etc., we must reflect love. No one is more miserable or more devoid of the presence of God and His infinite goodness than the man or woman who does not understand how to express love. Someone else, some member of the family, may not understand about Christian Science, or, understanding about it, he does not seem able to demonstrate it to the full extent of expressing love and kindness and consideration around the house. Your remedy does not lie in meeting that thought halfway and only going as far as he or she goes. Your remedy lies in your demonstration of God to the extent that you can express the true man. You cannot express true manhood and true womanhood if you are going to let the demonstration of another be your measuring rod of endeavor. Your expressions of love and gratitude and freedom measure your manhood or womanhood. And because another falls short, you certainly are not going to cheat yourself by curtailing your sonship with God because someone else has not been able to demonstrate the light. We are too often governed in our activities, even in our thoughts, by the fear of what others may think, or by the fear that our sentiments or activities will not be appreciated, and thus we question the advisability of expressing them. What someone else may think, and how others may take our exhibitions of love and gratitude and spontaneity, is not the point with us. The point is, are we expressing true manhood and womanhood? Are we reflecting God? If we are, then we are allying ourselves with God and availing ourselves of His blessings. If we are not expressing or reflecting our true selfhood with the Father simply because we are wondering what someone else may think, or whether our good efforts will be lost on the desert air, then we are willfully denying ourselves that which this true reflection is bound to bring to us. Remember that carnal thoughts do not originate in brain. I have been questioned on several occasions as to the correctness of this from the standpoint of Christian Science. But nevertheless, the statement stands. I want you to be clear on this, that a carnal thought never was created by a mortal or originated in a brain. A carnal thought comes from that one mortal mind which exists outside of mortal man. Mortal mind claims to be one, just as divine mind is one. In Retrospection and Introspection, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, "The sin is the sinner, and vice versa, for such is the unity of evil. And together both sinner and sin will be destroyed by the supremacy of good. This, however, does not annihilate man, for to efface sin, alias the sinner, brings to light, makes apparent, the real man, even God's image and likeness. Need it be said that any opposite theory is heterodox to divine science, which teaches that good is equally one and all, even as the opposite claim of evil is one." Close quote.